From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Has our understanding of autism evolved in the past decade? That will be the subject of the 10th annual conference called Promising Pathways at FGCU next month. It will look at how the scientific community has endeavored to unravel the mysteries of the autistic human mind and look at how public perception has created communities of support for families where autism is a part of daily life. Plus, ECHO's Global Garden will be open to the public next weekend for people to learn how seven different climates can affect the ability to grow sustainable crops. We'll learn about ECHO's effort to put a dent in world hunger by developing nutrient-dense foods that can grow in varying weather and climate conditions. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The ECHO Initiative in North Fort Myers is hoping to impact people around the world by developing agricultural food systems that last. The goal is to end hunger, or at least identify crops that can help keep kids from going hungry in landscapes from the countryside to urban areas around the world. Next week, ECHO will host its annual Global Food and Farm Festival to get a taste of what life is like in other parts of the world. This is the 26th year for the festival, which focuses on sustainable living, agriculture, and food, and it's an opportunity to visit the seven different climates that they've set up to research different crops. Rick Burnett is the director of agriculture at ECHO and joins us in the studio to tell us a little more about the different growing conditions and the different kinds of foods that have had success. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Danielle Flood, who is one of the organizers of the Global Food and Farm Festival, who can let us know a little more about what to expect if we go. Thanks for being here.
Great.
We are talking about the Global Food and Farm Festival happening next weekend at ECHO in North Fort Myers. Do you have a question or comment? Give us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Rick Burnett, your background is in plant and soil science. Tell me about the seven climates. How do you recreate climatic conditions?
Well, being in Southwest Florida, it's not too difficult to be able to replicate warm season agriculture here. Probably our biggest challenge is to try to demonstrate dry season farming techniques because we do have a semi-arid area. But we've got different zones such as the lowland tropics, the mountain zone, which is a whopping 24 feet high hill that we made out of sand. We've got the rainforest, which is easy to do, the monsoon area. But all of those represent different types of crops and different types of farming approaches that are appropriate for small-scale farmers in tropical areas.
So as a soil guy, I'm wondering how much you have to augment the soil here in Southwest Florida in order to have some sort of organic material in there.
Yeah.
Do you have to change it to try to mimic the kind of dirt that you would encounter in, for example, sub-Saharan Africa or wherever?
Yeah, it's challenging. It's pretty much sand, and we depend upon Lee County compost. And that's what, in many cases, in most cases, farmers would be doing is trying to increase the organic matter in the soil because that helps to maintain moisture. It provides more nutrients. So it puts us on a level playing field with other places that have challenging conditions.
And everybody has compost. I mean, that's pretty easy to make. I mean, everybody.
You can. That's part of our training regimen is to teach people how to develop and apply compost.
Yeah. And so what kind of nutrient-dense crops have you been able to create? Well, not create, but have
sure.
you coaxed out of the ground?
Right. So everything that we do is comes from a farmer somewhere. A farmer has figured out where these crops, how they fit into food systems. Moringa is the one that we're most famous for. It's a perennial vegetable, has a very nutritious set of leaves, and even the pods and the roots are edible. We have another crop called chaya. We've got katuk. People who visit the ECHO Farm would be seeing these, but we try to focus on as many underutilized crops as well as those that are more familiar in tropical nations as well, such as cassava.
Okay, I want to ask you a quick question about chaya. We had someone then that talked about it once before, and there is a certain way that you have to prepare chaya.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Can you give me a quick rundown on that so nobody injures themselves?
Well, chaya is not like an immediate danger. You can't just eat it and fall over dead, fortunately.
Okay.
it has hydrogen cyanide compounds. If you were to eat those raw a lot every day, they may build up and have effects. But we recommend that you boil chaya leaves for at least 15 minutes just to be safe. And foods are like that in general. Cassava is that way. I mean, the chicken we buy in the store, we need to cook. So it's not unusual to have to be able to cook to eliminate anti-nutrients and things like that.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we're clear on that, because one time we had a call and it was, whew, what do we do? Okay. So, Danielle, you were a missionary for 2 years in Niger, West Africa. Is that correct?
I was, yes.
So what did you see there as it concerns hunger and the agricultural challenges that you're now working to address there at ECHO?
Well, I was telling Bible stories, but we were located in a village that one crop, one harvest was their entire year's income. It was millet. And so most people around developing areas can grow corn if they have enough rain. And if they can't grow corn, they try to grow sorghum. And if they can't grow sorghum, they try to grow millet. And millet's typically the most drought-tolerant grain that they grow. And so they're on the margin of not being able to grow anything. And they were surviving by growing millet, some beans, and having cattle. And so seeing the standard of living and the way people would go through their day eking out a living in sustainable agriculture was really a key when I came to ECHO to want to offer options, offer resources that could help people diversify, improve their nutrition, improve their harvest, have enough income to pay for school fees and medicines. And really, you know, no one wants to just survive. They want to thrive.
So it kind of sounds like they were going with a monoculture, just like one crop, one popular
thing. The traditional way was to grow the field of millet, and that was what they grew. It's what they ate.
Is it difficult culturally to introduce other types of agricultural things to them, to get them to kind of change their way of thinking?
Well, yes, because it's been working for thousands of years. So changing something isn't necessarily the first priority. But if you try something, and that's one of the things that ECHO loves to do, is to be the experimenter and to show people that this actually does work. So they're not failing on their own fields. They see ECHO's demonstration. Maybe they try it in a small corner of their field. And if you can see the difference with this small plot is growing higher than the others, say maybe we should pay more attention to that technique. And we hear it over and over again. ECHO beneficiaries are talking about the technique they learned from ECHO, how their neighbors are noticing, and now they're teaching those techniques around the world.
Kind of like leading by example.
Absolutely.
That always works really well.
And we don't necessarily go in and change things. If things are already working, we want to go in and affirm and validate that, see what's working. Those things could be shared elsewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's offer ideas and suggestions. Give them an example of how it's going to work and then see how they go with it and whether they embrace it or not. And then they can move forward.
Yeah. And one of the most incredible things about ECHO is that the techniques that we teach, the plants that we're able to share, we've learned from some creative farmer around the world who's doing it well, you know, and so they just don't have the mouthpiece that ECHO does to be able to share it. And something that was, you know, started in Madagascar is now all over the Caribbean, and that kind of thing can't happen. And ECHO gets to be that role.
So it's kind of creating like a communication hub for people that are in completely different parts of the world about what's happening agriculturally here or there and how it might impact different areas.
Yeah, it's not unlike the Florida Extension Service. So its services go to every county in Florida. Our county is the world.
Yeah. We are talking about the Global Food and Farm Festival that's happening next weekend at ECHO in North Fort Myers. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So once you develop something like a particular like chaya or the what do you do then? Do you take the plant to a place and say, hey, here, check this out. What do you think? How does it go from idea at ECHO into the world?
So we do not have area development projects the way other agencies such as World Vision or other well-known agencies. We operate out of North Fort Myers, but we've got regional offices and two in Africa, one in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and then we have other outreach into the Caribbean and Central America. And we have a network that is made up of over 11,000 members, and many of them are doing work in these challenging parts of the world. Our job is to be able to find, to be informed of technologies, and to validate those, either through the science that we do, but in a large scale, it's through the science of other institutions. But to vet those ideas, demonstrate those and train those at in North Fort Myers, but more importantly, share about this. And through the internet today, through our web portal, echocommunity.org, we can get information out there. And we're also available to provide feedback.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely helpful because I'm sure there are a lot of questions that come in. And you also get questions on the local level, I'm sure, too.
We do.
Just how to deal with being in Florida, which is different. Can you give me an example of one item? And you mentioned it earlier. And it's – what's it called again? It starts with an M.
Moringa.
Moringa. Tell me a little bit about that and how it has had success.
So Moringa – is in many places around the world already. It's from South Asia. When I visited Northeast India, I visited many, many homes that had moringa planted around in their farmsteads, but Echo didn't introduce it to those folks. Through networks and literature, Echo became aware of this, and we realized that there are many agriculturalists, many communities, many farmers who do not know about this extremely hardy and nutritious plant. So it was a matter of us vetting the plant through information, looking at research that had been done, and then using our platform to inform development workers globally about this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And Echo also offers seeds of these hard-to-find plants. So if you learn about something through Echo, it doesn't help you if you can't access the seeds. So Echo does send seeds of underutilized plants to try. And then if that development worker finds that it grows in their community and the community accepts it as a food or a resource, then they can propagate it themselves and become that experimenter. And so now we are creating and empowering people to share with their neighbors something they've learned.
And once you get a seed, then you can propagate it forward and you don't have to keep coming back to the source.
Yeah, that's the idea. And that's the first – that's how I first learned about Echo 30-some years ago when I was an intern in the Philippines. It was seeds that came through Echo's seed bank in Fort Myers.
Oh, so you were a beneficiary of Echo before you came and worked
with
Echo.
For a long time. That's right.
Tell me about that work that you were doing.
So my first exposure to tropical agriculture was in the southern Philippines. I did that for 2 years, and I was hooked. I spent the next 8 years scheming ways to get back into that sort of work. And finally, in 1994, my family and I moved to the Thai-Burma border, and we worked inside of Thailand with migrants from Burma or Myanmar. And we set up a non-governmental organization, a nonprofit. And we began to work with migrants who had very limited resources related to improving their food security. And Echo played a big role in helping us.
And then you ended up coming to work for Echo.
Yeah, we did.
That worked out great for you. I have a question regarding the seeds. Russ is in Lee County and has a question. Russ, what would you like to ask?
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
You were talking about a seed question?
Yeah, first I wanted to say that I really respect everybody that I've met from Echo, and I love that they teach farming in a sustainable way, help farmers with better techniques. But my concern and my question is, when you ship seeds around the world, it's hard to tell what the consequences are going to be. I don't think you could tell what the consequences of a foreign plant will be in an environment until afterward, until later.
Okay, so that's a question kind of regarding maybe like an invasive species type of a situation. Mm-hmm. Is that a possibility with...
Sure, Russ is correct. I mean, we've seen what kudzu has done in parts of the South, and we sure don't want to be contributing to that. And so one approach is also to look where are the risks with particular crops. And there are some crops that we are not going to recommend because they are famous for being aggressive and invasive. Also, we ask the development workers to be very professional about what they try. So they get sample packets to try out with caution. And we want to know how well those turned out in those regions. Was it a successful crop? Are there any negative aspects to growing this crop?
Mm-hmm. I wanted to turn my attention to something else, too. We're kind of talking about like countryside, but what about the urban poor and urban populations? By 2015, the estimates say that 70% of the world's going to live in urban areas. Are there any efforts that you guys have that you're working with more urban situations?
Well, that's one of the parts of the farm that we didn't mention because it's not climactic, but it is conditional. And so there is an area we call the urban garden or the rooftop. And back in 1981, Echo's co-founder saw acres and acres of rooftops in Latin America not being used to feed the urban poor. And so one of those research and focus points at Echo is to look at what can we do to help people grow food in small spaces. You know, we have tires, we have wading pools, we have, you know, buckets and different things that you can use in a small space to grow nutritious food. And
is that kind of like trying to find a plant that doesn't need to have a whole lot of root space maybe?
Well, most plants don't. I mean, they've done some research. I know they started with deeper deeper plots, and then they were able to use kind of a hydroponic idea. We grow plants on carpet. And so the water and the nutrients come through the carpet to the plant. They don't actually need soil. They need light, air, water, and nutrients. And so you can do a lot of creative things. It's more difficult. You have to maintain the water source very carefully. But you can do things in small spaces, and the urban poor is definitely a focus of Echo Network members, Echo Research, and Echo documentation.
And the research that you're doing with that is that's pretty incredible that you're already thinking that, and it can grow on a carpet.
Yeah. The wow. other thing we're doing even locally is community garden support. So if you envision a rural Thai field, you know, it's not just that. It's schoolyards. It's nonprofits. It's churchyards and places like Pine Manor here in Lee County where people are, you know, growing nutritious food in an area where people don't have access to grocery stores. So they get to grow the food, eat the food they grow, be encouraged in that they did that work, you mm-hmm. know. And it's a very fulfilling work that Echo does.
Well, and we touched briefly on it earlier, but local education, too, with local people. A lot of people here in Southwest Florida aren't from here. They're from somewhere else where they actually have dirt instead of sand.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that you spend a great amount of your time training people locally and giving out tips. That's another feature of
– That's one of the reasons we have the festival, the Food and Farm Festival, because not – many people do know how to grow in the sand, and even Echo's co-founder moved here without having been to Florida before, and his first harvest failed. You know, it's different. Growing food in the tropics is challenging, and growing enough food to provide for your family is even more. So,
but we're very partner-oriented, so the Florida Extension Service would be, you know, what we would recommend turning to those guys first. They've got the experience, and this is their focus area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's definitely not the primary focus of what you're doing. So what can people expect when they go to this event next weekend? Are they going to be able to try the Moringa?
Yes. So the festival is an open-air kind of walk-at-your-own-pace festival, and it has a bunch of demonstrations where you can stop, learn something, taste something, experience something. And it's the most unique festival I think we'll find this season.
I really want to try Moringa now.
Yeah. So Moringa just grows on a tree. You can eat it fresh. You can eat it as a powder form. You can eat it cooked in some foods. People put it in smoothies as well. So if you find me on Saturday, I'll help you try your Moringa.
No, I just think it'd be really interesting, and then finding out how things are in different places too.
Another focus of the festival will be international food tastings and live on stage cooking shows using produce from Echo's Farm. So we're very excited to, you know, introduce dishes to the public, things they may not have tried before. Kombucha, jerk chicken with green papaya coleslaw and things like that.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. We have links to your event page, too, on our website, which is wgcunews.org. We are out of time, but I want to thank you both for coming in today. It was great talking with you. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.